Brigadier Wilson, reel number 5. How often did you have leave periods?
Oh dear, it's very difficult. I can't remember. I think about every... I think about it, it just depended, I think. I think it's about every 4 months or something like that.
And you came back to England?
Yes.
At that time?
Mm. Of course, it was very easy hop, you see, from the line. There's no distance, real great distance from the port.
Did you have leave after you had pneumonia?
I had sick leave, yes. Mm. But I was sent out of hospital too soon before my patch on my lung had healed up. I had to go back into hospital again. And I was there for some months. And from that, I got a bug which affected my sinus. I got an antrum trouble then. I had to have an operation on that, which kept me back. Otherwise, I should have been... Because I went down to Rouen, where the crisis, you didn't have this M&B. Mm. Now you have pneumonia and nobody thinks anything of it. You're walking about in a week or something. In those days it was 3 weeks or something before you crisis and then so on. But that's what happened.
Did you develop it actually in the line?
I developed it. Only we were behind the line, we were in reserve. We were at Mametz Wood, which a lot of people who served in France will remember. We were under canvas in the middle of winter. This was December. And I'd been down on a course. I'd come back. And my kit had gone on up. I knew where the battalion was. They'd been there before I left. I knew the way up to the battalion. I left my kit to be sent on, my valise to be sent up with the rations. But the kit never arrived. And I had no cover. And the battalion was on. I had one blanket, a man. And it was a very hard frost. And I arrived at this place, very hot and sweaty, and got a chill. I was carried down first off from that into the hospital.
Were you treated well?
Oh yes, very well. Yes, indeed. I was in Rouen Hospital, Rouen. I went from there to Netley. Mm-hmm. Then, unfortunately, they sent me out too soon. I arrived one day. I got out of bed one day, and I remember getting my valise out of a store, having to pull all my clothing was wet, of course. It had been taken off me, and I had to get that dried. And I went home the next day, on leave, too soon.
What kinds? You've mentioned some of the recreation that you did, the rat hunt and so on. Was any entertainment provided for you?
Well, that depends. Every time we came out of the line, if we were in a place where we could get hold of a piano, we'd have a concert. I'm able to play by ear. I could play, you know, if a chap came up and hummed a tune, I could play it, make an accompaniment. And we always had, but that didn't happen very often. It was when you went out to divisional rest, which was usually a longer rest, the ordinary, coming back into reserve in the ordinary way, you wouldn't be in a place where you could get any of these things. There wouldn't be any population there, any local people. Then we had our, but always boxing, and always if it was in a place where we could play, we played rugby or soccer. Whatever, we exploited every possible chance of entertaining and keeping the men fit.
And did you organise things like concerts and
yes,
those were dramatic?
Oh no, concerts we hadn't got time to. No, the concerts would be, as I say, it would be a concert. Chaps coming up to sing, mm-hmm. all sorts and kinds of songs, you know. But then the choruses are like Take Me Home to Blighty and, mm-hmm. and all the songs that we made, the chaps made up. But that was all. I don't ever remember hearing an ENSEC concert anywhere during the war. But that was further. I think they were perhaps further back down the line, or in some other sector. I don't remember one at all.
How much information about the situation at home reached the Western Front?
We got our papers quite regularly, appearance and our papers of the men. That was, of course, the most important thing. The regimental call of the day was, when we were back behind the line, was what we used to call a letter from Lousy Lou. the notes of the call. But everybody was looking forward to their mail was a great thing, you see. And the papers could be devoured, the local papers would be read from cover to cover and passed on between the men. Especially the local men. I had a lot of men from Bristol, and the Bristol papers would be there. All the soccer and all the rest of it would all be.
Pinkham and Greenham, as I remember.
The Pinkham?
Yeah.
Oh, yes. Yeah. The officers would get the Pinkham. Mm. We had regular things. It came out when we were in a place to where we could read them. But that was only when we got into reserve, really. But we played rummy amongst ourselves. And what the men, I suppose they played nap and poker and goodness knows what. But we made up all sorts of games.
What were your impressions of the situation at home when you were on leave?
I don't remember anything about that at all. I would just come home and have a jolly good time. go two or three shows and that kind of thing. But the spirit was always pretty good anyway. There's never any... I don't remember any spirit of defeatism amongst the people.
How much did the people at home seem to know about what was happening in France?
Oh, I think they knew pretty well, yes. I think, you see, we're so close, and there's not always chaps on leave. You had to have, you know, one time we spent, the 1st Division, which we were in, spent some time just near by Dunkirk, where we were put behind a barbed wire, in a barbed wire cage, the whole division. No exit, way in or out, except through certain places. And the idea was that we were going to specially train to make a landing on the coast near Zeebrugge. And we had a model of the sea wall made, in which we were practiced in going up this thing. In fact, the first few days, hardly anybody could go more than a few yards of it. But by the end of a month or so, we were all going through in fours. But the thing never happened, because you couldn't... There came a point where divisional leave had been held up. You can't hold 14,000, 15,000 men's leave up for very long. Otherwise, you get behind in the leave tables, and then you've got to send a whole lot in a hurry. That's what had happened, because the Germans, the men, we had to start letting men go and leave, and of course, I suppose it leaked out somewhere. The Germans started bombing us, and the thing was called off.
Did the people at home seem to know about trenches and...
I think so, because they... Oh, yes, I'm quite sure they knew all about that. Well, you see, we had so many chaps going back, was being wounded all the time, going back to hospitals and things. I think they knew all right.
At the time, what was your general opinion of the ability of the senior army commanders?
Never really gave them a thought. I don't remember ever having any feelings about them. We saw Haig once when he came down to inspect us before we were supposed to do this landing. But I don't ever remember seeing... You see the brigade commander if you're back in rest sometimes, or in reserve. But I don't ever remember seeing my brigade commander in the line. I expect... And Patsy Pagan's brigade got his brigade, I bet they saw him. Well, not every man, but they saw him pretty frequently in the line because they wouldn't be able to keep him out of it. Consider that the sort of man he was. But all this criticism of the higher command, I never give it a thought. Nothing Amen did either.
What was your opinion at the time about the way the government was running the war?
Never gave it a thought, quite honestly. We were a little unit living on our own, making the best of the job, and as far as I know, as happy as you could be under the condition.
Did you have any strong feelings at the time about any particular politicians?
No. Didn't even know one. I'd never voted in my life. I don't think I ever voted before the war, post war.
Were you at any stage of the war confident of victory?
Always. Always. I always felt that we may make it. Oh, I never felt it.
Did you ever think Germany would win?
No, I could only thought of Germany as they're only opponents. No, I never thought they'd win. I felt sure we'd, especially when the Americans came in, there's no question about it at all. You see, they came in 17, and then we had the whole weight of their munition business got underway, so we were beginning to scrape the barrel. They then came in strength, and of course then there's no question about it. But even before that, any of us never thought we'd lose. But I say, we're probably, as I say, the aggressive and the arrogance of youth.
And was there any time when you simply did not care who would win the war?
Oh, no. We cared all right. Because we knew what would happen if we didn't. Oh, yes, no question about that.
Did the war affect your attitude towards religion at all? Because of compulsory church parades and
things? No, I don't think so. I don't think they were resented. We only had them when we were a long way back behind the lines. I don't remember many. I think the only place I really remember compulsory church parade was on the sands at Dunkirk, of which I have very vivid recollections, because I was the chap who had to try and play the hymns, and I had to borrow the padre's little squeeze box, his little portable harmonium, and he only got the hymns which I could play, and I knew I could play. Yeah. He couldn't have the hymns that he wanted, he had the hymns that I wanted. And after every verse, this portable harmonium would have sunk about 6 inches into the sand. I'd have to pick it up and move it about a yard to the flank. Well, the fun we had over there, I got my leg pulled mercilessly by all the other subalterns. Now, of course, it's ridiculous, really, because although we formed hollow square for the service, only the front people, the front row, could ever hear anything. So you could start off with a... Somebody would start the thing, but God knows what the... there's no cohesion about it. I mean, the back people would probably be half a verse behind or something. Oh, dear.
Did you ever see padres in the front?
Oh, yes. We had our padre, a chap called Cassan, I remember so well. And he, by Jove, he was a chap. He you saw him almost as often as you saw the CEO. Mm-hmm. And when he came around, he always had a sack full of cigarettes. He was very popular indeed. Fine chap. We had a lot of apologizing to do for him very often because of our language. But we started a club where we had a fire system of fines for language. You see, you had a bit of fine, a franc every B that you throw, and so on. And at the end of the time, after about 3 months, before we went to at a suitable period, when we got a nice bit of money in it, we had a binge on it, on the money. It's always rather fun.
Before the armistice, did you hear any rumours?
No, but we didn't need any rumours. We knew what was going on, because from August onwards, the great push started in August the 8th, I think it was. Hoche, commander, Generalissimo, and they started pushing the Germans back. And when I got back to the battalion in August, it was open warfare. And I remember on one occasion we were following them up. They were going too fast for us half the time. And I followed them up, and we dug in 3 times one day. And I thought, we decided, well, that's no more digging in for us. It's all moving so fast. Got the habit of digging in. Wherever you see we stopped, you dug in. But then after being there about 3 or 4 hours, you moved and to another place, and you started digging again. It was a routine, you see. We hadn't took us a little time to get out of the routine. The Germans ran away. They withdrew so fast. In the end, we couldn't keep up with them. We knew they were finished. In fact, our last battle was the 4th of November at Catillon. It was on the Oise-Somme Canal, and I don't know how many prisoners my battalion took, but I know my company took over 200.